This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey, this is Trey. Thank you for joining us for, I'm not really sure how to explain this. Typically, it's Thursdays with Mary Langston, but we are doing it a little bit differently this week. So it's actually going to be Tuesday, and then we'll be back to Thursdays next week. I think that's about all the math and logic I can do. Does that sound right, Mary Langston?
That sounds about right. And I'm in the same boat with math and logic.
If you're in the same boat with me, then you're sinking and likely to drown. So hopefully you're not in that boat when it comes to math.
Well, that's right. How are you, Trey?
I'm doing great. By the way, thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me, Trey.
How was your Mother's Day weekend?
It was great. We had s'mores, and my mom likes to do this thing called a jumping picture. And those were the only two things she wanted for Mother's Day. So we did both.
Well, you're lucky because neither one of those sound like they cost very much.
Exactly. How was yours?
Great. Went to a church with Terry and Watson and Abigail came. Our children came to town and then we all went to my mom's house. And my rule is that Mother's Day ends in time for me to still play golf. So I think that's actually official. I think it's on the calendar that Mother's Day ends at a certain point. And so we had a good time. I think my mom and Terry had a good time. And then I went and played a match against my son.
That sounds like a good day. I'm guessing your Mother's Day ended about 3 o'clock. Is that right?
Mother's Day ends at about 3 o'clock, yes, and then with a tea time shortly thereafter, and then by the time we get home, neither my mom nor wife want very much, so, you know, finding out what they want is always a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
They're a lot like you. They're just very grateful for anything and everything and don't have a long list of things that they want, so...
Well, that sounds good. Well, I hope all our listeners had a good Mother's Day. I know sometimes that can be a hard holiday too, but I hope it was wonderful for everyone.
Yeah, Abigail's got a friend that graduated law school on Friday, I guess it was, and her mom recently has passed away. Mm. So she had to go through graduation without her number one cheerleader in life there, and then had to celebrate Mother's Day 2 days later. So we invited her to come over and celebrate it with us. And I certainly understand I'd probably want to be alone that day too. Mm-hmm. Different people react differently, but when I ordered the wrist corsages for my mom and wife, they're both white now. So they were red for most of my life and now they're both white.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Well, we have a lot of good questions today. I guess we better get started. Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay. We'll start with our first question. It's from a listener in New York. They write, "A common critique of government officials who make major decisions with national ramifications is that they are unelected. But do you think this is a fair criticism? Isn't that what a representative democracy is?"
Is that a fair criticism? It depends. The police chief is not elected. He or she has definite authorities and powers. That's one example that leaps to my mind. So, of course, there are unelected people in our system. Teachers are not elected. If you work for a public school, you're a public employee. You're not elected. Police officers, for the most part, aside from sheriffs, are not elected. The head of the FBI is not elected. The head of the DEA, ATF. Judges are sometimes elected, but oftentimes not. I only mention the unelected part when there is a perception or a belief that the person is exceeding whatever authority he or she has, or appropriating a power or authority or function beyond what they should be doing. And I'll just give you one recent example. I'm not taking sides on it. I'm just using this for illustrative purposes only. The mask mandate. So the Centers for Disease Control, the head of that is not elected, but the person who picks the head of the CDC is elected. That's the president. And if that requires confirmation, and I'm not sure whether it does or not, but the senators obviously are elected also. So the CDC has no power beyond that which was given to them by Congress. And Congress was elected by the people. So I guess you can argue, although it is somewhat tangential, that the head of the CDC is in a roundabout way picked by the people, but it's about four stages removed. And the people can't unpick the head of the CDC. You got to unpick the president or unpick the senators. So you go back, the CDC has no power beyond that which Congress has given them. They have no constitutional power. Of course, it's not mentioned in the Constitution. It's just whatever Congress has given them. So if I'm not happy with the Centers for Disease Control, in theory, I can direct my angst or my unhappiness with the president or Congress. But again, that's a circuitous route to make your point. So my criticism of unelected people is when they have strayed from the lane in which they should be driving. There often is and should be criticism for that. But even the president, who is elected and arguably the most powerful position in the country, can be accused legitimately of doing more than he or she is supposed to do. And you hear that with executive orders. I mean, we got a question not that long ago. Can President Biden really undo student loan debt? And I'm sure there are Democrats who wondered whether or not President Trump or President Bush or President Reagan had the power to do what they did via executive order. So, yes, there are unelected people who make important decisions every single day. Ideally, there is someone who was elected who can be the judge on whether or not those decisions are in keeping with the power. And where I get frustrated is when unelected people exceed their authority and make decisions that are far beyond the scope of what they should be doing. So, I mean, our system just works best when we all do what we're supposed to do, no more than that, no less than that. But, you know, it's a topic for another decade, the fact that human nature likes to appropriate to itself more power even than what it has been given. So that's a very long, typically long answer to a very good question from a listener in New York.
Well, thank you, Trey. Our next question is from Jill in Georgia. She writes, can you explain the Roe versus Wade situation from a legal perspective?
I guess there aren't any easy questions this week. Nobody right. wants to know what my take on the golf tournament was or wow.
We have some thoughtful questions.
Can you explain Roe versus Wade from a legal perspective? Yep, because that's the only perspective that I can explain it from. That's That's the one that I am most comfortable talking about. Okay, so Roe was a decision from 72 or 73. I mean, way before your time, Mary Langston, and I was just a kid then too. But it, well, we'll get to that in a second. Roe took its holding, which is a legal term. That's kind of the gist of a decision. We call that a holding. Roe took the holding from another case, which was Griswold versus Connecticut. In Griswold versus Connecticut, the state of Connecticut passed a law banning contraception. Why? I do not know. Why they thought that was a good idea, I do not know. I think there were only two states left in the United States that had laws against contraception. And ironically enough, one was Connecticut and one was Massachusetts. So it wasn't like they were really, really red states. But they passed a law banning contraception. And someone named Griswold, which may have been like a family planning clinic, or something like that. I don't know. I'm just going all the way back to law school now for the facts. But the gist of it is the court in Griswold identified a right to privacy. And then the Roe court expanded that right to privacy to include a right to abortion, and then constructed a trimester system where, depending on which trimester you were in, dictated what involvement government can't assert over your decision making. So the way I think about it, and it's the easiest way for me to think about it, I want you to imagine two train tracks or two roads. Mm-hmm. And to me, they're not parallel. They're actually perpendicular. One train track is the right to life. And that train track would be, or that road would be, what the child is traveling. And the word life is mentioned in the Constitution. It's also mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. So that's a right that I think is documented in our two foundational documents. So imagine that train track or that road, the right to life. And then the other train track or the other road is the right to bodily autonomy, the right to privacy, the right to control your own healthcare decisions, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. That right is not mentioned specifically in the Constitution, but Justice Blackmun, writing for six other members of the court, I think the Roe decision was 7-2. So Blackmun, writing for six other members of the court, found that in the penumbra or the shadows of the right to privacy lies the right to an abortion. So you will not see the word abortion in the Constitution for sure, but you also will not see the word privacy. Mm. On the other hand, Mary Langston, you also won't see the word marriage. I mean, I think people think they have the right to get married, but that word is not in the Constitution. Neither is the word education. Neither is the word self-defense. I mean, people mm-hmm. read the Second Amendment to provide a right to self-defense. Well, the hyphenated word self-defense is nowhere to be found in the Constitution. So if you're looking at Roe from a legal perspective, Roe says that you have the right to bodily autonomy or privacy or whatever you want to call it, and that's held by the mother. And that while those rights do intersect at a certain point, Roe set up the trimester system. And this is an oversimplification, but for the most part, according to Roe, the right of the mother wins in the first trimester. The right of the child wins in the third trimester. And it's kind of a sliding scale in the second trimester. And it all kind of hinged on viability. When, you know, I mean, I use the word child, other people prefer to use other words, but viability, the ability to live without the dependency or help of the mother. That was the legal construct for Roe. Now, I will say this, there are plenty of people who actually do believe that the Constitution gives you a right to privacy and maybe even a right to an abortion, and they still concede Roe versus Wade was a very poorly constructed opinion. I mean, you honestly don't hear that many people. They may like the result of Roe versus Wade, but you don't hear that many people talking about what a well-reasoned opinion it was. The bigger issue for me is the elucidation of rights. So Blackmun had to use this word that nobody's ever heard of before in their lives, penumbra. Mm. I mean, it's not even a shadow. It's a shadow of a shadow. But we'll just use the word shadow because nobody knows what the word penumbra means, including me. So are your, do you have rights living in the shadows of other rights? So take a right that you do have. You have the right to the free exercise of religion. Are there other rights that live in the shadow of that right? Mm-hmm. And even if you think that there might be, who gets to pull those rights out of the shadows into the glaring hot sun? Some people think that ought to be judges. I'm not in that group. Without, you know, like taking the rest of your life to answer this question, Mary Langston, there's another amendment, the Ninth Amendment, that more than suggests those rights not enumerated in the Constitution. That doesn't mean they don't exist. It means they're up to the people to decide them. Mm. So Roe versus Wade nationalized that policy. If Roe versus Wade is undone, overruled, then it reverts to the 50 states, which I know a lot of people that are part of the pro-life movement view that as not only a win, but kind of the end of the debate. I do not, because it still boils down to the definition of life, and life is mentioned in the Constitution. Privacy is not, marriage is not, abortion is not, but life is. And I don't think you can have 50 different definitions on when life begins. I don't think if you live on this side of the border with North Carolina, life begins at X point. But if you, you know, happen to walk across the street into North Carolina, life begins some other point. I'm all for the states making decisions, but not decisions on when life begins. So Roe, even people who like the result should acknowledge it was not very well decided. And here we are back again, in what, 50 years later? Mm. Yeah, 50 years later, still hasn't been resolved. But that's the legal analysis, is simply put, are there rights that you have that are fundamental, even though they're not mentioned in the Constitution, that live in the shadows or penumbras of other rights? And if there are, and most people would say, I mean, most people think they have the right to get married. I mean, I don't know. You're a smart person and you're not all that. I mean, it wasn't that long ago you got married. Do you think you have the right to get married?
Well, I guess it depends on what you're looking at. I guess the document.
Well, I think most people would say it is none of the state's business whether or not I marry another person. I think a lot of people would say that. None of the state of South Carolina's business whether you and John decide to get married. But we do have restrictions on marriage. I mean, you can't marry more than one person. You can't marry like a close family member. You know, there's a state called, there's a decision called Loving versus Virginia. The state of Virginia did not allow blacks and whites to marry. And, you know, I had Mike Lee on the show the other night, and he's right. That's an equal protection argument. And that's why that was decided. You can't discriminate. But you also have to identify whether or not the right to marry is a fundamental right. Most people would say it is. I'm not sure everyone would probably say it is. But it's not mentioned in the Constitution. So that is like a trip to con law class, your first semester of law school, which is why most people are probably sitting there thinking, gosh, I'm glad I didn't go to law school. But that's my legal assessment of Roe versus Wade. That's not a moral assessment. It's not a philosophical assessment. It's not a religious assessment. That's my legal assessment.
Well, thank you for sharing that legal assessment with us. And thank you, Joe, for your question. We're going to hold it right there. Be back right after this.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Our next question is similar, and it's from Karen. She writes, there is much discussion about the leaked draft opinion on abortion. No one has mentioned the specific case before the court. What is it? What is the question before the court?
The specific question before the court is whether or not Mississippi's law, which bans abortions for the most part, with limited exceptions, after 15 weeks. So remember, Roe was 24 weeks of viability. The Mississippi law is 15 weeks. I think there are certain very limited exceptions. But in essence, Mississippi is defining life, not in a religious way and not in a philosophical way, but in a legal way, that life begins at 15 weeks. So that is very different from what Roe said. And that's why the question is before the court. And so if you want to know what specific case is before the court, Mississippi's abortion law, which bans most abortions, almost all, after 15 weeks. And that is different from the holding in Roe, hence the tension. Now, judges are smart people, Mary Langston. They may sometimes keep that hidden, but for the most part, judges are smart. Mm-hmm. I think they could decide this case without addressing Roe. I mean, they've decided a lot of cases on procedural grounds or standing grounds or some other ground because they don't want to reach the real issue at bar. But I don't think they're going to do it in this case. I'll bet you, this is my prediction, and I'm probably dead wrong because I don't know that I've ever met Justice Roberts. I may have met him once, but I don't remember it, and he certainly wouldn't remember it. I'll bet you there are some people that would say, up until a certain point, states can't do anything, and after a certain point, you cannot have an abortion. And the states get to decide within those two points. Now, is that point conception to birth, or is that point 8 weeks to birth, or is that point, I don't want to talk about partial birth abortion just because that just depresses me to even think about that. But if this reverts to the states, you will have states that allow partial birth abortion. You will. It's not the state you and I live in, but there will be states. So, you know, I'm a simple-minded person, as you know. I don't know how life can begin at 50 different stages according to 50 different states. I'm not smart enough to understand why that is.
I'm not either. Well, thank you, Trey, and thank you, Karen, for your question. Our last question is on a lighter note, and it's from Barbara in California.
I mean, it would have to be a lighter note, wouldn't it? I mean, yes. where else could we go?
Right. I wanted to end us on a lighter note, and Barbara sent us this question, and it's perfect. And she writes, what's the best piece of advice for my recent college graduate son?
I would tell him he sounds like he has a wonderful mother, and I would move back home and live there as long as I could until she calls the police to have me formally evicted and removed from her home is what I would tell him. I mean, if I could go back, I don't know why in the world I was so heck bent on my independence and living on my own. If I could go back and do it all over again, I would stay with my mom. I would even stay with my mom probably to my fifth wedding anniversary. I would stay there until literally she called the sheriff and said, look, he's now 35. He will not leave his room. Can you please come get him? The advice I have, Barbara, for your son really is partly that, but that's not the advice you want me to give, so I won't. Pursue a life of significance, which is usually found in helping other people. If we're lucky, we get to pursue jobs, which also enable us to impact the community and help others in a positive way, but not everyone has their ideal job right out of college. Some people don't ever get their ideal job. So the job could be just the means by which we meet the obligations in life, and then we use our spare time to pursue what we call significance. If we're super lucky, then our jobs themselves provide that significance or that reason, the reason to live, the desire to help other people. Mm-hmm. So you got to find something in life that's constructive, worthy of your time and talents, and then pursue that. And just keep in mind, it's great if you can make a living doing that. It's great. You know, I think back on the jobs I've had in my life. When I worked at the tobacco warehouse, the job itself was not like changing anyone's life, I don't think. But it enabled me to have a little bit of spending money, and it enabled me to meet my obligations. Paper route definitely was not providing a lot of significance to the rest of the world. Except the dogs that got to chase me on my motorized bike every morning. They found it significant. Mm. But it's a means by which to support yourself, and you can pursue significance in other realms. I mean, I think about you, Mary Langston. You have a number of jobs. One in particular, I think, provides significance to your life, and you're much closer to Barbara Sun's age than I am. You have a job that enables you to pursue your definition of significance, but you also have other jobs that may be there to help you pay the light bill, or you know, to help you pay off student loans or pay off a car. So it's great if those two match up fully, but rarely does that happen in life. So I would tell him, pursue significance over success. And if your job aligns with that, great. If not, then find a job that allows you to meet your societal obligations or familial obligations, and then pursue significance with your spare time.
Well, that was great advice, Trey. Thank you. And thank you, Barbara, for your question.
Yeah, well, I didn't do any of that. So free advice is worth what you pay for it. And I was lucky because the jobs I had, particularly in the courtroom, both provided for my family and gave me an outlet to do what I thought was significant.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right.
Pretty much ended when I got to Congress, but when I was in a courtroom, it was there.
I don't know about that. I think Congress did just a little bit.
No, not really. All right. Well, I can't tell you how much my head hurts thinking about these questions that you sent my way. Nobody like wants to know who were you pulling for in the race this weekend, or were you surprised at the Kentucky Derby winner? They're all like these deep questions.
They are. We did have some people that watched the Sunday show that gave some opinions on different crime dramas to watch.
Okay,
but
good.
No questions.
Send all of those to me, because I just finished The Tunnel, and I'm which is. You know, when I'm watching miniseries that have subtitles because they're like not from the United States and they're not in English, you know that I am dying for crime drama miniseries suggestions. And I certainly can't ask you, and I can't ask my wife. So I need other people to help me there.
That's true. Well, maybe our listeners will send their ideas.
And then hopefully you'll send them on to me. That'd be great.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, I hope you have a wonderful week, and I hope everybody has a wonderful week, and thank y'all for bearing with us as we do things a little bit differently. I actually have a guest on my other podcast that I'm excited to talk to. He's a professional golfer, maybe the best putter in the world, certainly one of the best putters in the world. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk to him, but we're going to air that on Thursday. And so thank you for letting Mary Langston go on Tuesdays. And then we will be back to the normal schedule, God willing, next week.
Have a good week.
Everybody have a great week. And you too, Mary Langston. Thank you for spending another Tuesday with Trey. Please subscribe, rate, or review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or at foxnewspodcast.com. You've been listening to the Trey Gowdy Podcast on the Fox News Podcast Network.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.